all-new edition of the Perpetual Notion Machine is on now. As always, we have prepared another half-hour segment for you this evening, and you can also listen anytime on our podcast. I'm your host, Will Cushman, and tonight's show is produced by Lincoln Tice. Tonight we'll be speaking about a topic that relates to an episode we produced a few weeks ago about forestry. We'll be learning about a hidden aspect of forests, the fungi that live underground and actually help the trees. We only see them when they send up their fruiting bodies, aka mushrooms, to disperse their spores. They're called mycorrhizal networks, and it turns out that they are essential in all forests to help trees survive. It's a wood-wide web that is important, that is as important to trees, some would argue maybe more important to trees, as the internet is to us. Mycorrhizal networks are complex webs of fungi that weave through every ounce of soil in the forest. They are made up of living organisms called mycorrhizae, a word that comes from the Greek for fungus, combined with rhizome, which means root mass. That's because these fungi have evolved to live in a symbiotic relationship with plants, where they connect at the ends of the roots. Fungi are masters at dissolving soil minerals, which are passed along to the roots to be taken up into the plant, where they are used as essential nutrients for growth. In return, the fungi get some energy from the plant in the form of sugar produced by photosynthesis. So both parties benefit from this mutualistic interaction. We've known about mycorrhizae for a while now, but scientists have discovered that there is even more going on than we thought. This is where the wood-wide web comes in. It turns out that mycorrhizal networks connect one tree to another and can transfer water and carbon from one tree to another. This can happen when one tree is in need, for example, if it is shaded from the sun, being attacked by a pest, or fighting a disease. Botanists such as Suzanne Simard from the University of British Columbia have been demonstrating this for two decades. She and her colleagues have shown that the interconnection and material transfer occurs most between kin relatives and trees of the same species, but also occurs between different tree species. One challenge, though, for scientists and the rest of us following this research is figuring out how and why this happens, and how such a relationship evolved in the first place. Does a tree try to help its offspring by passing along nutrients via mycorrhizal fungi? Or is the fungi really the one in control, aiding sick trees to maintain its maximum number of hosts and ensure its own survival? It's a fascinating mystery, and one that we are going to delve into in an interview. For tonight's show, Lincoln spoke with someone uniquely qualified to teach us about mycorrhizal networks. Dr. Thomas Horton is a mycologist, meaning he studies fungi. He's a professor at the State University of New York College of Environmental Science and Forestry, and he was kind enough to answer Lincoln's many questions about the underground world of mycorrhizae. Here is their conversation, recorded a few weeks ago.
Okay. Hello, Tom. Thank you so much for coming on the Perpetual Notion Machine today. How are you?
I am fine. Thank you for your interest.
Tell me about fungi. You know, we think of mold and mushrooms, but they are much more than that, aren't they?
Yes, of course. So I think through our education and everything else, we sort of lose the fact that fungi are an entire kingdom. And we think of all the plants and we think of all the animals as incredibly diverse and amazing. And then we think fungi and we sort of put them into another box. But we don't really process that to the extent that a whole kingdom deserves, if you will. So you're absolutely right. There's a lot going on there beyond molds and things that are decomposing. And my work in particular is focused on the symbiotic fungi.
Cool. How long have you been studying fungi, and what got you interested in them in the first place?
Yeah, well, I started my master's in 1989 and met a plant ecologist who was talking about how plant succession was being potentially driven by what are called mycorrhizal fungi, allowing trees to get established in one place but not another. I had already had a class in taxonomy way back when, where the teacher said, you know, by the way, all these plants have symbiotic fungi, but we don't know much about it right now. We probably will in about another 10 years. And this was pretty much about 10 years later. And he talked about it. He said, I can't get anybody interested in this project, but it has to do with these mycorrhizal fungi. And I said, you know what? Let's do it. I'm ready. Did my master's with him and then went on from there. It was a great opportunity, and it's been great ever since.
Yeah, I'm also fascinated by these mycorrhizal fungi. What does the word mycorrhizae mean?
Yeah, so that's myco meaning mushroom and rhizae meaning root. The term is really just a noun. It's the structure on a root where fungal material is interacting with the plant material. So there's cells of the fungus and cells of the plant intertwined, and plant roots are not getting nutrients on their own, except if we fertilize the heck out of them. They'll kick off the fungi because they don't need them. But in nature, that's not the way it is. All those roots are colonized by fungi. Those fungi get nutrients, that is your typical fertilizers, NPK and everything else, water, and deliver it back to the root, and it transfers into the plant. The plant does photosynthesis, brings sugar back through photosynthesis, drops that into the fungus, and it is a mutualistic symbiosis. So mycorrhizae, plant root, and both organisms are contributing to each other's survival.
Got it. So how are the fungi able to do such a good job of picking up these fertilizers in the soil?
The majority of the literature will simply state that the hyphae are so much smaller that they can get into smaller pore spaces in the soil and therefore have greater access to nutrients than the plant roots, which at this scale are humongous. To us, they're tiny, but compared to a hyphae, that is the fungal part, they are pretty large. But I argue strongly that the fungi have a whole new set of enzymatic capacities for getting at nutrients that the plants can't even get to if they could get into the pore space. So forms of nitrogen that plants would not be able to get are available to the fungi, and that is transferred back to the plants. Forms of phosphorus, calcium, etc. So it's both the sort of physical nature, the size of the hyphae, but also biochemical and enzymatic capacity that the kingdom fungi brings in that plants don't have available.
Okay, so they're using enzymes and they're using these hyphae. That was actually a question I meant to ask you earlier. Describe these hyphae and how they function.
So the hyphae are sort of like, you know, microscopic thin threads. They're tubes, if you will. They're little tiny threads, kind of like a cotton mass, but even smaller. And the plant, the fungi form these hyphal threads and networks of hyphae, and they're fanned out into the soil. And then they also, so when they're absorbing nutrients, they're extremely fine. And then they come back to sort of highways of transport, and that they deliver the nutrients back to these highways of transport, and then moves around the body of the fungus, which can be huge, 35 acres in one case. You may have heard of the humongous fungus. But all, you know, normally they're much smaller, in the order of 3 to 4 square meters in a forest soil. And they're delivering the material through those little sort of highways back to the root systems. Immature, you know, the sugar is coming out of the root systems and going back out to those fans of cottony mass where they're doing all the work out in the soil to get the nutrients.
Okay, and these hyphae are pretty much everywhere, right? Do they make up most of the fungi mass?
Yeah, so it is. Yeah, it is the body of the fungus, and when we see the mushroom shooting, that's just the apple, right? That's the apple on the tree, but the tree is out of sight underground. And so you're walking on the body of these organisms there, and it's in three dimensions, right? It's not just surface. In fact, it's below the surface, and it can go. I've collected hyphae down 1.8 meters down into the soil. That was a unique case, but the hyphae are really just all over the place underground.
Yeah, and there must just be a phenomenal number of them in one, handful or something of soil, huh?
Yeah, that's right. So I should have it on the tip of my tongue, but it's some crazy amount. So if you take a thimbleful of soil and extract the DNA and then just amplify the fungal DNA and even just mycorrhizal fungal DNA, you get something like 30 species of fungi.
Wow.
And if you move your little soil sampler, take the same amount 5 centimeters away, you get the same number, and you might get one or two that are the same, but it's probably a completely different set of 30. The scale of diversity is mind-boggling. It's like being in the tropics looking at insects or something.
Okay.
So it Yeah, it's both. I tell my students it's either frustrating or a great sense of job security because there's a lot still to do.
Yeah. So how do you think these mycorrhizae started to form, these symbioses with trees? How does that work, and how do we understand that to have come about?
So in an evolutionary sense?
Yeah, I guess an evolutionary sense, and even in also real time today, how do they come together?
So I guess from the evolutionary sense, the first plants start to, they're not quite what we think of plants yet. They're more like mosses, liverworts, hornworts, things like that. 400 million year old fossils were the first records of something happening on land, coming off the edges of the oceans, the seas. And there are fossils showing mycorrhizal structures in those plants. They weren't roots yet. They're subterranean stems, if you will, and they still had the same structures that we see today. So people will tell you that the fungi helped plants colonize land back then. I flip it. Since I'm a mycologist, I say the plants helped the fungi colonize land. So that's the beginning, but it's evolved probably, best we can tell, it's evolved at least twice. You have the arbuscular mycorrhizal types, which are on most herbs, and then you have the ectomycorrhizal types on most pines or all pines and oaks and things like that. It's evolved at least those two times, but then within the ectomycorrhizal types, we now see it's probably evolved maybe 15 unique times, and each one of those interactions involved a different way of doing it, that both organisms kind of figured out how to cooperate, override defense systems, things like that. So the answer is a complicated one, but it is so successful, it's evolved multiple times. Now, to bring it down to, you know, you have a seed that germinates and it interacts with the fungus, in real time today, it's probably chemical signals. The plant recognizes there's a fungus nearby, it germinates. We have records of that happening. Once it germinates, the fungus recognizes something in the plant and grows towards it because they can grow faster. And then they start to interact at the cellular level. And again, I've already mentioned this kind of, but the plant could reject that and say, you're a pathogen, I don't want you. But somehow there's an overriding of that resistance that recognizes it as non-pathogenic and therefore lets the thing in. And the symbiosis gets started.
And some of the fungi go right into the root itself?
Yes. You need to take the class, and we'll talk about this for an entire semester. Yeah. I don't know how much detail to go into, but basically, either the fungus just wraps around the outside of the root, that's the ectomycorrhizal type, or in the arbuscular mycorrhizal type, or sometimes it used to be called endomycorrhizae, the hyphae go between the root cells. They go into the root, but between root cells, and then they form arbuscules inside root cells. However, they never penetrate the cell membrane of the plant. Okay. So you get an arbuscule inside the cell wall, but the plant membrane goes with the fungal branching, increasing surface area for nutrient exchange between the two organisms. As soon as you punch through the cell membrane of the plant, you've got a pathogen.
Yeah. Got it.
Big difference.
Got it. So the reason I had the idea to talk to you today and do this show is because I've been hearing about these fascinating research with trees. There's this new book out, The Hidden Life of Trees, by Peter Wolben, I believe, a German forester. And he talks a lot about you know, how amazing trees can, you know, send nutrients to one another, can send signals of pests that are bothering them to other trees, and he says that they do it a lot through their mycorrhizal networks. I just wanted to talk a little bit about that. Is that really common in forests, that trees are able to use their mycorrhizal networks to sort of communicate?
I think that's, I'm going to be a little bit of a naysayer here. I hope I don't mess you up here, but
no, that's fine. I know there's a flip side.
Yeah, I think that's a human interpretation. I think it's a human interpretation of what we're looking at. So for my work, I've been pulling up root tips and showing that these networks definitely connect different species of trees. So you can have a pine and a Douglas fir in the same stand, and all of the roots are colonized by fungi that are on both plants. And in small volumes of soil, they have to be the same individual fungus connecting the two. So my view is that the plants, we used to think of the plants as competing for soil nutrients. Probably not. It's probably the fungi competing for the nutrients, and then the plants are competing with those fungi, if you will, through their interactions with those fungi. You give me carbon, I'll give you nitrogen or phosphorus. So it's a very, very different dynamic than what we used to think of for plant ecology about how the plants get nutrients. Now, the book you're citing and work by Suzanne Simard suggests that the plants are quite aware of what other plants are in a stand, and they're delivering their sugar down into those plants, into the mycelial networks, expecting the fungi to go deliver that sugar over to another plant.
Yeah.
that's a lovely thought, but I have a real hard time with it. I think that the fungi are definitely doing it, but it's not a conscious thing. And there's, again, driving back to Darwinian evolution, it doesn't make a lot of sense for a plant to support a competing plant in a stand.
Right.
With its own sugar, right?
Yeah, I've read some of Suzanne Simard's research, too, and I know that trees of the same species or that are even the offspring of another are more likely to be connected through mycorrhizal networks. So maybe that could help explain why they might be willing to
As well as donate. Having sort of physiological interactions with the fungi, the different trees, if you're the same species, you're more likely to get, to be able to interact positively with that particular fungus. And so it could appear that mom is supporting babies, but in fact, it's just babies have the same abilities as mom, and so they benefit.
Yeah.
They're kin. Yeah, so it's funny. I started off in San Francisco when I got my master's and PhD, and I thought, man, this is fantastic. The whole world's connected and happy, and the 60s are happening underground. And I've slowly pulled back from that and become a little bit more cynical, I suppose. But anyway.
No, I don't think so at all. Actually, I'd heard that perspective too, like, we're familiar with trees, so we sort of think that the trees are intentionally doing this. But, there's this massive underground fungal network, and another way to look at it is just that the fungi is trying to ensure its own survival. So it's really mediating the exchange of sugars, water, nutrients to a tree that's not doing so well. Because if it has more hosts, its own chance of survival is more insured. So really, when you think about it, it's almost like the fungi is feeding the trees, sort of, to help itself, I guess.
To help itself, that's right. Or certainly those trees that it supports do better, therefore it does better and is able to reproduce better, and on it goes.
Yeah.
One thing to think about also, where I think Suzanne gets a little bit off the track, is that the fungi are heterotrophic. And so if they get carbon, if they get sugar from a tree, you may see carbon, radioactive carbon, showing up above ground in another connected tree. But what she has never shown is that it's sugar that's transported. And others have shown that it's actually amino acids, so the carbon gets stuck onto a source of nitrogen, and that's what gets transferred to the other tree. And they're saying, "Oh, this is energy going from one tree to another through the fungal network." It may not be energy that's being transferred there; it could be nitrogen or whatever other molecule, but not the original source of sugar. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I also had a question about how fungi is transporting these things sometimes. Is it just through diffusion, like from a higher concentration to a lower concentration, or how are fungi able to transport things from one tree to another?
Yeah, on the finest scale, if a molecule is moving from the fungus to the plant, it first has to go through active transport across the membrane of the fungus, get into the open apoplastic space of the root, transfer. They can pass through the cell wall. That's pretty porous. But to go through membranes, that's a whole other game. So it's got to pass through the fungal membrane, probably through active transport, and then they pass through the plant membrane, also definitely through active transport. So there's a lot of chemical signaling and genetic interaction that goes on there. It may appear to be source sync, but I think that it's a lot more complicated than that when we get down to the reductionist level and actually see what's going on.
Hmm. Can it just sort of flow through the hyphae, or are there different cells?
Well, inside the hyphae, yeah. It's going through the cytoplasm, so the fungus is also controlling the material flow, and it's building. I've seen some crazy videos of the fungal hyphae producing these sort of erector set skeletons inside, cytoskeletons, and it basically makes a little packet of something, and it moves that through the cell and drops it over to the next cell through the dolopore septa. There's a lot going on that we just don't have a good handle on, at least I don't. But it's not just simply water mass flow. There are fungal structures called rhizomorphs that the basidiomycetes and some ascos produce, those are the fungal highways I was talking about, and they're hollowed out. They're just like inside the plant cell, those vessels. They're hollowed out, and so water can flow through those freely, and there's no cell walls or anything to block them. But for the most part, the hyphae are individual strands, and those have cell walls, and there has to be some kind of genetic interaction going on to get stuff to move from cell to cell.
How fast is the hyphae able to transport things?
I knew you were going to ask that. I don't know. I wish I could tell you.
Or
how far? You know, we have records of some of these. There's an ectomycorrhizal fungal thallus that I was on the paper, or I collected the mushrooms or something. Anyway, it was about, 30 square meters. It was huge, one individual. All the fruit bodies were that one individual. I can't imagine that material that was being picked up at one end of that individual was being transported to the other side of that individual. I think it's all local, even if it's connected. The hand wasn't talking to the toes, but I don't know. I'm just making it up now.
Yeah.
I just don't think that the distance traveled is too significant, even if you can demonstrate that the individual is quite large.
Yep. So the reason I got in touch with you is your student, Sarah Smith, who I worked with up on the Menominee Reservation here, the forest in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So the Menominee, they do forestry a little bit different than the rest of us. One thing that they do there is they keep the old trees that they call grandfather, grandmother trees. They keep them because they believe that they help the younger trees to survive. I thought maybe some of this research could be with mycorrhizal networks could show a sort of a Western scientific, explanation for that. Do you think there's anything there?
I do. I think so. I know. I've seen evidence of it in one way, in Sweden, in how they conduct forestry. It's a very, very different mindset than what you're talking about with the Menominee, but it's the same concept. And they have something called leave tree forestry, if you will, where they might go through and do a clear cut, but they leave a sporadic number of trees alive. And then when they go back and replant in those places, the root systems of the leave trees provide mycorrhizal inoculum, mycelial networks, and so the trees do better around those leave trees. the ones that they go back and replant. So I think there is something to be said about leaving these old grandfathers and grandmothers out there for their, you know, incredibly diverse group of fungi that they've got on the roots. There are very few studies that have tried to even come close to identifying all the fungi on a tree's roots, but it's probably, you know, 10, 20, 30 different species, maybe more. So it makes, from the perspective, I think that I can definitely see the benefit of doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're coming at it more from a spiritual idea.
You can listen to the rest of Lincoln's interview with Dr. Tom Horton of SUNY ESF in Syracuse, New York, on the podcast. Our apologies, we've run out of time this evening. I've been your host, Will Cushman, and thanks to our engineer, Dave, for getting the show on the air. Tonight's episode was produced by Lincoln Tice. Tune in again next Thursday for another original episode of the Perpetual Notion Machine.